The Father's Day card had these words on it. Dad, thanks to all your lectures, I never change horses in the middle of a job worth doing. I know that the squeaky wheel gets the worm, and I never count my chickens until I walked a mile in their shoes. And you thought I weren't listening. Well, the Apostle Paul, as he spent time with these Corinthians, as he wrote to them, must have thought they weren't listening. They certainly weren't displaying any evidence at all that his ministry, his teaching, his input into their lives had made a difference. Remind me of the little boy who came home from school on his first day and the parents said, "How did it go?" And he simply said, "What a waste of time. I can't read, I can't write, and they won't let me speak." Well, out of the mouths of babes. As someone said, out of the mouths of babes and sucklings came a lot of things that should have stayed down. I guess everyone in this room at one time or another has said the words, "Grow up. Why can't you just act your age?" We've said it to other people have said it to us. Now, of course, there is nothing wrong with babies. They are, up to a point, delightful creatures. But being with babies, you're reminded instantly that they need a lot of care. They are messy. They dribble. They spill things. Someone described babies this way. They are elementary canals with a mouth at one end and no sense of responsibility at the other. Now, nobody minds when a baby acts like a baby. That's normal. But when a child is 5, 10, 15, 20, you put the figure in, and they're still acting like a baby, big trouble. Big trouble. When a grown-up still needs to be burped and bathed and changed and fed, something is wrong. And that's what the Apostle Paul is saying in these verses. Spiritual babyhood is fine for spiritual babies, but it is terrible for those who should be spiritually mature, who should have grown up in their faith. Growth, of course, is important to all of us. From the moment you're born, you're weighed and you're measured. And I don't know how many of you in your homes had a height chart, or you stood at a doorpost and a pencil mark went along it as the years progressed. It is a normal, healthy goal to grow. And then, of course, when you reach adulthood, you just grow that way instead of that way. Growth is a sign of a healthy child. And if someone is stunted in their growth, there is a problem. And that is the first illustration that the Apostle Paul uses as he tries to teach these Corinthian Christians. Now, before we look at the three illustrations that are in our passage, let me just see if I can gauge where you're at. Are you a spiritual baby or are you mature? Well, perhaps not spiritually, but are you physically a baby, immature, or are you mature? Here's some tests. They are, of course, tongue-in-cheek. 6 a.m. is when you get up and when you don't go to bed. You keep more food in the fridge than beer. You hear your favourite song playing in the elevator. You watch the Weather Channel. Jeans and jumper no longer qualify as dressing up. You're the one calling the police because of the noisy neighbours. You actually eat breakfast at breakfast time. And 90% of your time spent in front of a computer is due to work. And if you're listening to this list, you're hoping that one of these sayings doesn't apply to you. I guess there's a difference between being immature and being mature. Taking on responsibility. And that's the image that the apostle uses. Three pictures, three illustrations. First of all, he talks about the family. And the point he's making is maturity. I could not address you, he says, as spiritual, but mere infants. You're worldly. You act and think like people who have never come to faith. When Paul came to Corinth in the winter of about AD 50, he spent 18 months planting a church. There was only one church in Corinth. It's funny, when we go to Turkey and we go to Antalya, capital of which is four times the size of Southampton in population. But there's only one Turkish church there, made up of Turkish people, in a city four times the size of Southampton, you don't say, shall I go to the Methodist or the Baptist? Or, hey, if you want a fellowship, you go to the church. There's only one there, made of Turkish believers. And it was like that at Corinth. There was only one church. The Apostle Paul planted it. And it took him 18 months to help grow that church. And the background is there in Acts chapter 18. He then moved on to Ephesus. And while he was still based in Ephesus, 6 or 7 years later, he wrote this letter as reports come to him about the problems in the church he'd left behind. Now, Corinth wasn't much different to, our world today. It was populous, it was proud, it was prosperous, it was philosophical, it was polluted. And the church should have stood out, should have been like a light in a situation of darkness. But their light had grown very, very dim. And there wasn't much difference with the people in the church and the people outside the church. And so, guided by the Holy Spirit, the Apostle Paul wrote this letter, these words. And he uses three illustrations. And he's saying, be mature. Don't stay as children. Now, I'm told that one of the most popular fishes for aquariums is sharks. But if you catch a small shark and you put it in a small container, no matter how old the shark is, it will never outgrow its container. It will grow proportionately to the tank you put it in. So if you put a 4-inch baby shark in a 10-inch tank, it will stay 4 inches. If you take that shark and put it in a 20-inch tank, it will grow to about 16 inches. It grows proportionately to where you place it. That happens in some churches. People stunt themselves in their growth in the situations they find themselves. They may be physically old, but spiritually they're not growing at all. I guess as parents, we've all had that embarrassment. We had it just recently, a couple of weeks ago. We were at a conference and Arlo put his England shirt on. And when he stood out the front, it was about 4 sizes too small for him. It was really tight and, you know, almost revealing his belly button. And you see that in your kids sometimes. They stand out the front, you think, he's not wearing those trousers again because they're 2 inches too short. Hey, he's a healthy lad and therefore he's growing. And as a church, as individuals, we ought to be growing. And if we're not, there's a problem. Don't just grow old in years, the apostle is saying. Grow up in your faith. A man who had 25 years with one company went to his boss. He said, I want a rise. He said, I think I've earned it. And the boss said, well, why do you think you need a rise? He said, well, I've got 25 years of experience. His boss said, no. You've had one experience for 25 years. Now go away. See, he thought he was doing well, but all he did was the same things day after day after day. It was one experience for 25 years. Not 25 years of experience. And some of us have got 5, 10, 15, 20 years of Christian faith. But is it 25 years of just one experience? Like babies, these Corinthians desired to be fed, birthed, changed and entertained. They'd grown accustomed to being babies. They liked the cuddly comforts of the crib. They liked to partake in the sweetness and the diet of milk. It's easy to digest. People are doing it all for you. But there comes a time in the life of every infant when they have to go from milk to solids. And that's what Paul says. There are two signs of maturity that you can ask yourself. Am I growing up in my faith or just growing old? The first sign of maturity is verse 2. Solid food. I gave you milk, not solid food. For you are not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. Solid food, of course, is something you sink your teeth into like a good steak. Because the old joke says, you know you're getting old when you sink your teeth into a steak. And they stay there. Solid food is not a formula weaned to body temperature and bottle fed. It takes work. If you're going to have solid food, someone has to prepare it. Somebody has to chop it up. Somebody has to cook it. Somebody has to present it. It's more than just mixing some mixture in a bottle, shaking it up and bunging it in the microwave. It's not something to pacify our palate. It is substance to make us strong and healthy. And I suppose the question is, how's your diet? How are you eating? Can you feed yourself? Or do you depend on the person in the pulpit to do it for you? Are you living off one meal a week every Sunday? Or can you open up the Bible and feed yourself from it day by day by day? And teaching from the pulpit, teaching in the house groups, is meant to complement your daily diet, not substitute it. So one of the marks of maturity for the disciple is they're able to feed themselves spiritually. The second mark is verse 3. The mark of maturity is right relationships with other people. You are still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarrelling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? Mature people practice love. They try and get on with one another. Someone eats humble pie. Someone goes out their way and makes the effort. Immature people sing about love and then go away and quarrel and get jealous and moan and groan. And the Christians in Corinth were like children in the playground. Do you remember that time when you said, "My dad's bigger than your dad"? And someone said, "No, he ain't." "Yeah, my dad could beat your dad in a fight." "No, he can't. My dad's richer than your dad." And we've all done that when we were children. And that's what the Corinthians were doing. They said, "I follow Paul, he's better than Apollos." And someone else said, "No, well, you can have Paul and Apollos. I follow Jesus." God, talk about the big heads on those people. But in verse 4, they're all saying, "We're better than you." And the problem is this: the emphasis is on men, not on God. And Paul says, "Look, Paul, Apollos, Peter, we're just doing what God called us to do. We're servants. We're not in competition. We're complementing, we're assisting, we're aiding one another in this work." And so you can almost hear the Apostle Paul saying to these Corinthians, "Look, grow up. Peter, Paul, Apollos are only men, servants who pointed you to Jesus. And if you want to claim allegiance to them, then act like them. Encourage, support, love one another." So in this first image, he uses the family. And the point he's making is maturity. Don't just grow old, grow up in your Christian faith. The second picture he uses is that of a field. And the point he draws out here is quantity. Quantity. What after all is Apollos? What is Paul? Only servants who through you came to believe. And then he says, "The Lord assigned us each a task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes it grow." I like the old story, it's a corny one, of the man who was, the farmer who was out in his field, just standing there. And someone was going by and noticed him there, and on the way back he was still just standing in the field. And next time he went by, the man was out in the field. And next time he drove by, he was out in the field. So he stopped and said, "What are you doing standing there?" He said, "Well, I'm trying to win the Nobel Prize." He said, "Well, how come?" He said, "Well, I'm told they give it to anyone outstanding in their field." Oh, it woke you up, Colin. In these verses, the Apostle Paul views the church as a field. A field that should be producing a crop. Now, how did this illustration relate to the Corinthians? Well, twofold. First of all, he speaks about diversity of ministry. One person plants the seed. One cultivates the soil. One person waters the plants. One person harvests the fruit. Diversity. Everybody pitching in. And every member ministry. And the Apostle Paul will develop that later in the letter. When he talks about the body. The church is like a body. We're not all hands. We're not all ears. But the ears need the hand and the hand needs the mouth. And the body is varied but one. Diversity of ministry. Mount Everest is the world's highest mountain. Anyone know how tall? 29,029 feet, Colin. What's that in metres, Mitch? 8,848. In May 1953, two men became the first in history to climb to the top of Mount Everest. Anyone know who they were? You got it. Edmund Hillary, a New Zealand beekeeper and explorer, and his Sherpa guide from Nepal, Tenzing Norgay. They reached the summit together. They got international fame. Thank you, David. One day I'll plug my laptop in and I won't have to keep doing this. Excuse me a sec. Aaron Corbett, that's what he is. Thank you for telling me it was about to die. Normally you wait till it dies and then I get the message. Yeah, Hillary was a beekeeper and an explorer. And of course him and his guide got to the top, international fame. When they came down, the press corps were waiting to interview them. But actually, something happened on the way down. Hillary slipped and started to fall. He would almost certainly have fallen to his death, but Tenzing Norgay immediately dug his ice axe and he braced the rope. He saved his life. At the bottom of the mountain, the international press made a meal of this. This was a fantastic story, a heroic guide. Through it all, Tenzing Norgay just remained calm, professional, just very blasé about it all. And when the questions were asked, "You saved his life," he simply said this: "Mountain climbers always help each other. No big deal. That's what we do. Hey, members of the church always help each other. No big deal. That's what we do." And every member ministry, all pulling together. And then secondly, not only does he talk about diversity of ministry, but unity of purpose. One person plants. Why? Because they're looking towards the end product. One person cultivates. One person harvests. Whatever we do, verse 8 tells us, each person is then part of the harvest. The one who plants, the one who waters have one purpose. And they will each be rewarded according to their labour. We may have many callings and many ministries, but we have one purpose: to serve the living God. And then the third thing here is the need for humility. Human leaders are not the be-all and end-all. Leadership is important. That's why we have a gift of leadership. And if a church hasn't got good leaders, it will struggle. But the church doesn't rely on men, it relies on God. Verse 6 says, it is God who gives the increase. And so whereas the Corinthians were seeing leadership as a competition, Paul says, you've got it wrong. Leaders complement one another with the bigger picture in view. And he goes on to tell us about that bigger picture. His final illustration, he talks about the temple. This time, quality is the thing he draws out. The temple and quality. Verse 9, God's building. And then he elaborates it, not just any building. Verse 16, God's temple. I like the story of the man who he was stopped in the road and someone was doing a questionnaire and they said, "Sir, what is your church preference?" And he thought for a minute, he said, "Red brick." He said, "Red brick. What is your church preference?" There's only one church of Jesus Christ. It's made up of people who will worship God in different styles and have different styles of leadership. And we may give ourselves subheadings of Baptist, Methodist, Brethren, Evangelical, but there's only one universal church that we're all part of. That should be our church preference, the church of Jesus Christ. And here God compares his church to a building. And he says a couple of things about it. First of all, verse 10 and 11, it's built on the right foundation. Visited every year by thousands of people, one of the great tourist attractions in the world. It is 179 feet tall. It's a work of beauty. The problem is, this structure of 179 feet tall was built on 10 feet of foundations. And over the years, it has slowly lent and lent and lent. And it would have collapsed had not engineers cunningly found a way of keeping it up. Survive this day, not because of its foundations, but the skill of engineers. The foundation, of course, is the most... That's the Leaning Tower of Pisa, in case you're wondering. The foundation is the most important part of the building. From the foundations, you get size, you get shape, you get strength of structure. And the Apostle Paul says there is only one foundation to his church. It is not Apollos, it is not Paul, it is not Peter. It is Jesus Christ himself. And the foundation I laid was the message of Christ. His person, his death, his resurrection, his eventual return. And if we move away from those foundational truths, we will fall like a building with no foundation. And then he talks about right materials in verse 12 to 17. When you build, build wisely. And he uses three negative materials: wood, hay, straw. They're temporary. They're ordinary. They're cheap to obtain. Wooden, you built a wooden structure, wooden frame, and then you use straw and hay for the roof. Don't think they had them in those days, but one discarded cigarette or one naked flame and your whole building went up. He said, you can build God's work like that. You use the wrong materials, but don't be surprised if it's consumed. It disappears as soon as it was built. Or he uses positive materials. You can build with gold, silver, costly stones, probably marble and granite. Permanent, beautiful, hard to obtain. You can find wood, hay and stubble anywhere. But if you want gold, silver and marble, you have to dig, you have to mine it. It's costly, takes shape, you have to cut it, has to be fitted, has to be quarried. And the apostle's point is clear. We're to build on one foundation, Jesus Christ. And then as we serve him, let's give him the kind of service that has a quality to it. The type he deserves. Not just quick and easy, but that which calls for commitment and dedication and effort. So in conclusion, three main illustrations. The family is talking about maturity of character. Am I growing up in my faith or just growing old? Secondly, the field, quantity of service. Am I helping to produce a harvest, the fruit of the Spirit in my life and in the life of others? And then the temple, quality of materials. Am I building with the right stuff? A new hair salon open for business. Trouble is, they opened right opposite the old hair salon on the opposite side of the road, so he wasn't best pleased. And then the new hair salon put a sign in the window, £7 haircuts, to take his trade away. The old barber responded by putting another sign in his window, we fix £7 haircuts. You can have it cheap and cheerful if you want, but some things require quality. Quality. There's a story told of a man who was being shown around a building site, and he saw a stonemason chiseling a stone. He said, excuse me, what are you doing? And the stonemason said, well, I'm chiseling this stone. And he saw a carpenter sawing some wood. He said, what are you doing? He said, I'm sawing some wood. And then he saw a labourer pushing a wheelbarrow. He said, sir, what are you doing? And the labourer said, I am building a cathedral. He had the bigger picture in view. Wasn't just preoccupied with his own little world and his own little job. He had the bigger picture in view. We are building the church of Jesus Christ. Let's build it well, for he deserves it. Let's pray.